I've gotten too comfortable to open the door. Garbage is inside. Garbage?
Oh, he's in this little thing. Yeah. Garbage has been...
The tiny ones, the two Russians.
Oh, they're out? Mm-hmm. The two Russians, the Slav chickens?
Yeah, the Slav chickens.
Just because they were purchased from a Slavic lady?
Yes.
Like how our new thing is I start recording while you're away from your mic. So everyone driving their cars can't hear you. But yeah, we're here. Where did my sangria go?
Was it in a coffee mug?
It was in a coffee mug. Do you need to get any?
No, I'm good.
Or you're good?
Yeah.
You said you had a bunch?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
All right, I'm going to kick your mic up.
Oh, that's right. You don't want me to rock.
No, it's this. You can. I'm just literally have to go like this while you're rocking.
Okay, there we go.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's cool. Oh, we didn't start with the sex moaning.
Mm.
We don't have anything to eat tonight.
We don't.
So we thought we'd do something equally unsettling.
Except for Hi-Chew. So there's something...
Network. People don't understand. The more they complain about it, the more I'm going to do it.
Could you guys stop doing something you've done for 3 years?
No.
Next time we
you've
chew.
Listened to the show for this long.
And if we're chewing, next time would you go like, Yeah. People would turn it off like at that point. They'll be like, okay, I'm
they're getting this. Out of their trucks at work. Yeah. And it's on their speakers. And you're like,
like, we're done with this show.
What, are you guys scrupulous?
So, do you have anything? Oh, I guess I should say that I have decided that we are doing the August Q&A.
Is that too late?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I wouldn't do that to you. July. No, I always do this. I always say the month previous on accident.
Oh, yeah.
So August 18th/19th, whichever day we get to it.
I just saw a lot of questions come in, so I thought it might be today.
Oh, did they come in today?
No, during the week.
Oh, so, that's right.
I saw quite a few come in, so I was like, oh, maybe this weekend.
No. Because I looked at the release schedule, and I'd like to do 3 regular episodes and then a Q&A. So it's like on the main feed, it's 3 long ones and then a short one.
Okay, good.
So I think over the course of the week, I'm going to try to see the Barbie movie, and then we can talk about Barbie. Yeah.
Great movie.
On the short, our short ones can just be movie reviews or something.
Yeah, actually, it would be smart.
Because
then it'll be thematic.
Thematic. So what do we need to talk about? You want to talk about Bishop Barron?
Yeah.
Oh, you got a brain freeze. You're so weak.
Yeah.
This is like you fucking. You're just doing it naturally.
Okay. Yeah. Barron.
It happens so fast to you.
I know it does.
Is it because you're a sun person?
It could be a sun before the moon people. It was pretty funny. My
most of the canon thing.
One of my daughters were saying, "Dad, why are your eyes always red? Like at a certain time of the day?" I was like, "They're not. Maybe it's the contacts, but they don't get red." And then one of them was like, "Oh, I get it. It's because you're part black. Black people always have red eyes.
Do they?
It's like a thing. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The guy known for that.
Here, I'm gonna do this. Try now.
Is that better?
It is better.
Okay. Yeah. So,
do you like to sit there better than over there?
Or is it better when I was sitting over there?
The sound was easier, but...
Okay, yeah.
No, it's okay.
No, I'm laughing over there.
I'm going to pause it really quick.
I am back.
Dick, fuck!
Okay.
How do we justify doing that? And also, like, talking about Christ. Yeah, that's much better. Barron, Bishop Barron. So I think that this is triggered by something on Twitter, but we won't discuss Twitter itself.
Yeah.
Which I've been told to never do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Bishop Barron in partnership with Word on Fire. This last week, was it what, 3 days ago, 4 days ago?
Yeah.
Put out a thing that they were like, we, you know, they was, I don't remember what the messaging was.
It's
basically
like, that I think like 79% of Catholics who fall away from the faith do it before the age of 23.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at the stats even closer, it's like 60% of total do made up their decision by the age of like 16 or 15. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it is a pretty big, it is a pretty big, I think, epidemic within the Catholic faith, and one that I think is overlooked, which is why I made that one episode about scrupulosity, because I do think it's something that people don't acknowledge as often. And yeah. I think when they do acknowledge it, they just blame the world.
We were going to call this like Ariana Grande syndrome.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's kind of like Ariana Grande
syndrome. SpongeBob is gay.
Yes. And I think what ends up happening is that they never self-reflect. They never say, what did I do to drive my child away from the faith?
Yeah.
They just blame the world. They're like, the world corrupted my child. The world did this. The world did that. Rather than just saying, well, maybe there was something in the way that I form the message of Catholicism, of Christ, or whatever, that kind of pushed them away. And
like, I wonder if people who badmouth the Pope realize what effect that has on their children.
Yes, yeah. Because, I mean, if you did that their entire life, they're not going to respect the papacy, no. Obviously.
Well, they might, by grace of God, but they might, not, it's not yes. because you did anything yes, to keep them yes, there.
Exactly. I think more often than not, you just drive them away.
Yeah, but Bishop Barron put up a thing and was like, Bishop Robert Barron, for people that, everyone who listens to this would know. Yeah, we have a lot of Protestant listeners.
Okay, yeah.
For some reason. Thank you for staying around.
Actually, I'm actually thankful that they listen.
I know.
It means that they're intellectually honest and just are curious.
Yeah. Anyways. Or masochistic. So Bishop Barron, he's a bishop of what? Something in L.A., in California.
It was California, but I think he got moved like to Minnesota or something.
Oh, so he's been moved.
Yeah.
Okay. He put up a thing. They were like, you know, to kind of do some evangelization. They were running a fundraiser, and they were like, for every $20 donation, they would donate a copy of the Gospels to a college student who is not Catholic, I would assume. Or maybe is Catholic.
Well, I think
maybe,
it is for the Catholics. Actually,
maybe yeah. Catholic, yeah, yeah.
To keep them in a faith.
Yeah, and this received a lot of flack.
Yeah.
From online, like, trad tards.
Yes.
And what was the main criticism was, like, that it was, like, a scam? They were, like, scamming money? Like
something like that, yeah.
They were, like, they were criticizing, I think, the methodology of, like, giving out copies of the gospel.
Yeah.
I
think they saw it as opportunistic in terms of sales.
Yeah.
It's like pushing their product or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of dumb. I mean.
Well, it's just like, do you know, like, Word on Fire is a business.
Yes, yeah.
It's a ministry, mm-hmm. but it's a business, and ministries operate as businesses on donations.
Yes, yeah.
Like, obviously, they
their products cost money. Like, it's an actual exchange of goods and services.
Yes, and they're donating $100 copies of the gospel mm-hmm. to a college student if you donate $20.
Yes, yeah.
It's essentially a, like, 5x donation match.
Yes, yeah.
And the impression I got kind of sifting through all the comments and the response I got to my comment, you know, yeah. Was it my assessment was like, they're really just jealous that their copies of the Bible aren't as nice as the ones that are going to be donated.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't, it's you like going through what everybody was saying, you can't walk away with any impression beyond the fact that they just hate Robert Barron.
That they just hate.
They just hate him.
Yes.
And I don't really, because there was the one guy who I guess was diddled by a priest and became Orthodox or something. Right, the guy that I sent you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, Bishop Barron is a gay and a groomer. And he like sends this, he's like, he was sending me these articles about things that Rob, you know, people, like members of the parish administration, wherever he was bishop in California, were like doing weird stuff or like saying weird stuff, and somehow that had any bearing on Bishop Barron's conscience. But then I realized the guy was just linking to his own blog.
Yes. It was his own articles.
I was like, why are you doing this?
I have the inside scoop. Look what I wrote. I was like, okay.
And he's like, you're a pedophile apologist. And I was like, okay.
I know, I hate that. I hate stupid shit like that. I mean, honestly.
Like, people are literally, they are very lucky they're not saying that in person.
Yes, I know.
Very lucky.
Yeah. And it's like they're, I actually think it's a very, very Protestant thing to. So let's say that everything that he was claiming was true. For me, it still doesn't change my opinion of what Bishop Barron has done and what he stands for. Because if I were going to do that to every single person that was either a saint or that has helped the world, it's always easy for me to find their flaws, right? I remember they were doing the same thing to to that one Protestant guy who actually I think was a pretty good apologist against atheists. What was his name? He was like an Indian dude.
Ravi Zacharias.
Ravi Zacharias.
They were just scrupling him.
Because, I mean, he had like, I think, like 35 women came out and said that he was had an affair with him. I can't remember the number, but you can look it up. But he had
very, very intelligent man.
Yes. He had sex with many women. It was like, I don't care.
He's Indian.
Yes. At the end of the day, it was like, yeah.
Like he
was
show Bob and Vagine.
Yes. He was somebody who was a public figure. Yeah. He was going out there. Women like men with power that are public figures. He fell into his temptation and he fucked them. In the end, it's like it doesn't change anything about what he did for me in the end. And so it's like I just don't care when people come at me with stuff like that. They're like, well, do you know what this guy did in his past? And what this guy was like, he has to take it up with God. Yeah. All right, if he went to confession and he is trying to live a life of virtue, I really couldn't care less. And that's something that bothers me the most. I had this one student who was a murderer, and I think he killed two people.
Oh, was it the guy?
I don't know if you ever met him.
No, but I know the story.
Oh, yeah.
This was like 5 years ago?
Yeah, something like four or five years ago. Yeah. No, 2020. So 3 years ago. Yeah, it was about 3 years ago. It was like the last semester before the university shut down for COVID, whenever that was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it was the semester before we started the show.
Yes, the semester before, yeah. Yeah, and he just kind of came to me. We're just talking about things, and he was like, yeah, he's like, a lot of the other professors are kind of standoffish because when they find out that he killed two people.
Oh, like when he was a kid.
He was like 18. Yeah, at this point,
do you remember why he killed people?
Yeah, he said he was drugged out, and it was like a fight with him and his girlfriend.
So how did he get off? How did he get out of?
It was he got like 25 years.
So why was he in class?
Because he got out of jail. He did his time. Because
so he was like old.
Yeah, he was already like in his late 30s or early 40s.
Oh, I'm imagining like an 18-year-old kid.
Oh, no, this guy was old already. He was like in his 40s. And he served his time. I think it was just like, whatever is like manslaughter, I think it's just like a crime of passion, or you're completely high and whatever. He got manslaughter, he went to jail, and then he got out. And I said, a lot of people were that way. But when he talked to me, I was like, oh, he's like, I don't care if you killed people. I mean, I care that you killed people. But at the same time, it's like, you are still human. You're still worthy of me to talk to. You're still somebody who should learn, and you're still somebody who should, you know, who should have the opportunity for repent and for your opportunity to grow and become a better person. The idea that one crime or one sin or even like a multitude of sins define this person forever until eternity, I find kind of absurd. The only way that I could believe that to be the case is if I did not believe in Christ. If I didn't believe in Christ, then I could see that there is no idea of redemption. And if there is no idea of redemption, then yes, your sins do ultimately lead you to damnation, as we all are worthy of damnation.
So if you were a Jew.
So if I were a Jew, yeah, I think I would be. But the fact that I actually believe that Christ died for even him and that he is worthy of salvation.
Well, especially him.
Yeah. Especially for him, yes. Yeah. And so it's like I have no issue with any of that. And so whenever they try to bring stuff out there, I remember they did that with our local priest here in the valley. Mm. It's like, do you know why he left Ireland? Look at this. Look at this. So it's like, I don't care. I just do not give a shit because it's like, it's not, I am not the judger
like,
of
is
that.
He doing that now? Whatever it is, you know?
Like, well, yeah, exactly, yes. Like, yeah, was he doing it now? Like,
okay. Are you going to go kill another guy?
Yes, yeah, you're going to, no, exactly. Okay. Yeah, I mean, am I going to let a murderer, like, babysit my kids? No.
Did he have any kind of religious commitment to anything? Was he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Was he? Was he?
Well, he was discerning. That's why he talked to me, because he was into the philosophy course I was teaching, and we went through Aquinas, and it was something that he said really affected him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I wonder if he's Catholic now.
Yeah, I know, I hope. Yes, yeah, I hope. But you know that's normally the hope, yeah. And you just, you know, like one of the actual corporeal works of mercy is to visit the people in prison.
Yeah,
it's like that's what you should be doing. You should be going to these people and being like, you know, it's you're not even completely lost. That ought to be the message.
It's like Deacon Mark at St. Andrew's. He goes and like does services. It administers the Eucharist to prisoners and stuff.
Yes,
like that.
Exactly.
Seems like beautiful.
I know.
Yeah.
Like they should have conversation too. I mean, I don't know. It's like whenever they bring that stuff up, it almost seems as if they're lacking the theological like virtue of hope. Maybe I don't know what is it that they're lacking, that people that just try to pinpoint hope. Whatever flaws they have done, but there's something in their theology that they're greatly lacking for them to even give a shit. I just don't care.
What would they be lacking?
Yeah, besides charity, I guess. Charity, hope, something.
Well, I would, yeah, and it's almost like I wouldn't be interested specifically in what they are lacking, but like, what do you actually believe positively?
Yeah, so there,
like, what do you, like, what belief could you have?
Yeah. Because I do find it bizarre, because like I do separate that between like how I protect my family.
Yeah.
If there's like a known child molester.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, I'm not going to be like
actively.
Yes. Here, just watch my kids. I'm going to go out to the bars and can you watch my 3-year-old over here? It's like, no, I'm not going to do that, but I'm still going to talk to them as a human being. Just because they have a propensity of a certain sin and they have caved into the sin and got caught and went to jail. It's irrelevant to me in terms of how I treat them as a human.
Of course.
And the way that I think when they look at someone like Bishop Barron and then they try to dig up something.
None of this is to even say that Bishop Barron's done anything wrong.
Exactly. I'm not trying to say that. Yes. I'm not trying
to say that. It's not like Bishop Barron like fucked up really bad.
Yes, I know.
Publicly,
but the fact that they bring that stuff up, even their made up shit, as if I would care. It's like, why do you think I would care?
There were other people who were like, actually he's a Nestorian. And I'm like, how? What has he said that makes people think he's a Nestorian?
Yes, I know.
Like what?
They say he's a universalist. Because
Nestorian's the separate, that Christ only had one nature. No.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the natures are two separate natures. No, right, there's something like yeah. He was half man, half God. Something like that.
But I don't know why they would attribute all these heresies to him. I find it bizarre. It was like he never displayed any of that. The only one that could come close is universalism, but even then.
But even then, it's not universalism.
It isn't,
hoping
yes.
is not universalism.
Exactly, yes.
Like Balthazar was not.
Yeah.
Was it Hans? No. What's his full name? Or something. I don't remember his full name.
Yeah.
Balthazar, whatever. Because didn't Ratzinger say that?
Balthazar and Ratzinger were good friends.
Cardinal Ratzinger at the time said something like, Balthazar was the most significant theologian of our age or something.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
like
he was probably one of the most influential. A lot of people don't know his name, but in terms of how he presents,
because he was intrinsic to how Vatican II was.
Yeah, especially like
do you need a break? Yeah. You look like you're gonna sneeze blood.
But like but yeah, like the way the messaging was formulated, the pastorality, everything that we kind of understand the Catholic message to be in the present day was highly influenced by Balthazar.
Yeah.
And his
And dare to hope thing.
Yes, the dare to hope thing. The idea that we ought to, I guess, focus on how we relate the message more, that we kind of have lost that for 500 years, and that's kind of what his message really was.
After Trent. Because Trent was, what, the 1530s?
Yeah, somewhere or other, yeah. But yeah, a lot of Vatican II was about how the message was to be given, how the gospel was to be given.
I mean, it was after Vatican II, there was a lot of liberty and loose enforcement that occurred after Vatican II, but it was not Vatican II mandated that folk music be played in mass.
Yes, yeah,
it
was
a lax.
I mean, yeah, those are the abuses of Vatican II, but that's not Vatican II itself.
Mm-mm. There's a book on Word on Fire. Let me find them. If I can, super quick. I have to... I think it's called Reclaiming Vatican II.
Oh, really?
By... Where's the bookstore? Give me that. Give me that. Yeah, it was on there. I was just kind of looking through their books. View all. Give me all of them, damn it. It's somewhere. Spirituality, cultural commentary, evangelization, apologetics. I don't know where it is. But they... What the hell? All books. Sorry, this has become a principal thing. Oh, there they all are. I remember the cover. It's like Reclaiming Vatican II by Father Blake Britton. Mm. And it's essentially a book written about, this is what Vatican II says, this is what happened.
Right, okay, cool.
Yeah. And I would like to.
Yeah, that would be actually a good one to read. He probably wants to reclaim at least the spirit of what Vatican II was supposed to
be. It's like, you know, the SSPX schismatics run around yelling stuff like, they call people like Novus Ordo Catholics. It's like, you're a Novus Ordo Catholic if you're a Catholic.
Yes.
That's redundant.
Yes, yeah.
It's like saying a Trinitarian Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway.
Nothing to do want to separate those things.
What do you mean?
Like between Trinitarian Catholics and Novus Ordo.
No,
Catholics.
I know.
But you know what's another thing?
But it's just like if you are a Catholic, you adhere to this thing.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think one of the other thing that kind of bothers me with a lot of that attitude too is that they throw around the word heretic far too loosely.
Heretic is just someone they disagree with.
Yes, pretty much. That's what it became. But you know, and then they want to separate between material heretics and formal heresy. It's like, yeah, there is a difference, but the difference...
Because formal heresy entails scandal, doesn't it?
Formal heresy is when you...
Preach it.
No. It actually is when you are told that you are heretical by the church, and then you continue it.
Yes. Yeah. It's defiance.
Yes. So it's basically like material heresy means that you could be in heresy, but you're not aware of it. And then if you're pointed out that you are in heresy...
But I think the reason I had that... crossed up a little bit was that you wouldn't really be told you were heretical unless you were talking about it publicly.
Yes, yeah.
Like people, if you just had a thought in your head, the church would be like, ding, ding, ding. Yes. Like you're...
But with the part that bothers me the most is that in both cases, whether it's material heresy or formal heresy, for you to be in heresy has to be dictated by the magisterium of the church. Yeah. Like an individual parishioner.
You can't just go, heretic.
Yes, I don't have the authority to point and be like, heretic. You could point and be like, well...
Potential heretic, maybe dangerous. Yes, maybe. I'll tell my priest.
Yes, or you could just say you're logically wrong. You know, you could say other things and be like, well, that's not really what it says in a catechism, and so on and so forth. Like you could say things that if somebody is wrong, or you could point out a certain sin, you know, if somebody's being scrupulous and you say, well, you're being scrupulous, that's different.
But you don't go, heretic.
Yeah, but you don't say heresy because... A heretic is something that is deemed by the authority of the church, in which we lack.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they just like loosely throw this word around, I find kind of absurd.
Well, I think it's because there are a lot of heretics everywhere, mm-hmm. and there are many, like there are people in my life that I can point, I can go heretic, but mm-hmm. I just can because they're, what happened? You dropped one of your high chews? We have to come up with a name. High Highland. We have to come up with an Instant Gram or a cost company for High Chew.
Highly chewables.
Highly chewable? Yes, there we go. Wow, you are a mess over there.
Yeah, I know.
Highly chewables. My favorite highly chewable is the strawberry one.
Like if you are a Lutheran,
yeah,
you are a heretic because Lutheranism was deemed heresy by the church.
500 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so if somebody is following a certain...
Wait, so what year was he declared a heretic?
Pretty quickly.
No, it was like 5 years.
Yeah.
When was Luther declared a heretic? January 3rd, 1521. Okay. Okay. I was just curious. I didn't remember if it was 21 or 23.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Didn't know if we needed to celebrate or not.
But yeah, and so like that's something that's a heresy when Zwinglians.
Well, there's a heresy.
Yeah, so there's a heresy, and so when somebody begins to follow that heresy, we could say that you are a heretic. But if somebody is either just behaving immorally, or they're believing in something that is not completely in line with church doctrine, me as a parishioner, I cannot point to that person and say you are a heretic. All you could point out is like you're kind of wrong here, and then you could show them the catechism, or you could show them a church father or a doctor of the church, and be like, well, this is more in line with the church teaching, and you're not actually saying what's correct.
Because there's something I'm trying to think about what the word heretic means and how it's supposed to be used.
Yeah,
and that you can say if someone is saying something wrong, you can go, that's heretical, or that's potentially heretical.
You could say it's potentially
heretical. Or that is this kind of heresy. Like, Arian. But you can say that, but when you say heretic, it's almost like a practitioner of heresy.
Yes, like but also like what you said is that you're pointing to a heresy that the church already deemed heretical. Yes,
but when you say heretic is someone who practices heresy.
Yes, yeah.
It's someone who professes it, practices it, preaches it. Something.
Yeah.
Because like you said, a person who just potentially believes something heretical in their head and doesn't know it, they're not a heretic simply because the church hasn't recognized them as one. That's not what a heretic is.
Exactly. It's not what a heretic is. Yes.
That's the wrong word.
Like if there's a Catholic.
Wrong?
I remember Bishop Barron said this one time. He's like, you know, let's say that Martin Luther, and he kind of attributed incorrectly, but let's just do it for the sake of the argument. Let's say that Martin Luther, when the church said your theses, even though it's barely topical, but your theses are heretical, and then let's say Martin Luther said, okay, I deny all that, but
he only had to denounce like 5 to 7.
Yes, so like 5 of them, and let's say that he denounced them because I want to start a new order where we are call ourselves like Bible first theology, and so they're not really they're putting scripture as a primary thing rather than philosophy or other theologians. That's fine.
Yeah,
like there's nothing wrong about a Catholic who looks at the Bible as primacy and doesn't care to ever read Aquinas. You don't have to read Aquinas.
It's once you say that reading Aquinas is heretical behavior.
Yes.
And or now, whatever.
And now you're wrong.
Damnable behavior.
Yes. Yeah. But, and so it's like heresy is a real thing. And to be in heresy is not merely an act in which an individual can deem. It takes the authority of the church to deem as something as a heresy. Yeah. And once the church deems as something a heresy,
and
then there's somebody who proclaims to believe in that heresy.
Knowingly,
now as a parishioner, I could say that is heretical.
And that person is a heretic.
Yeah, now that person is a
practitioner of heresy.
Because, you know, they're boldly saying, I am a Lutheran or I am a Calvinist
I think that's where I got the speaking about it publicly thing.
Yes, exactly.
That's an accidental quality of it that I
brought. I remember like when we went to your friend's house and we recorded and some of those buttons were like proudly saying, I am this, right?
Yeah. And it's like, kiss me, I'm Lutheran or something.
Yes, yeah. It's like, okay, well now you are, you are already heretic, deeming yourself as this because you're falling in love. Let's say somebody says, well, I actually believe in Arianism. I think that's more correct. Well, okay, now you're a heretic. Because the church already deemed that as heresy. But before the church deemed it as heresy, a parishioner cannot just look at the bishop and be like, you're a heretic. He has no authority. It required a council. It required the bishops to come together to deem something as heretical. Yeah. And then we can follow suit. But I think what ends up happening is that all these like Trentian trads are thinking that they have the authority to look at someone like Pope Francis and say, you are a heretic. I was like, imagine. Yes, I'm like,
he's a material heretic.
Yes.
He's a material heretic.
It's like, you don't have the authority to deem that. Francis has never stood and said, I believe in X, Y, and Z, that there's already an authority of the church that deemed those as heretical. If
he might be wrong.
Exactly. He might be wrong. He might be a sinner. Some of the things that he says might not be as accurate as he could say it. But that doesn't mean that you're a heretic. It doesn't even mean that you're in heresy. It just means that you're dumb. Right? It could be that you're kind of a bimbo. It could mean that you don't really understand it.
Are you calling Pope Francis the ultimate bimbo?
Yes, he's kind of like a Latino bimbo guy, like an old grandfather type.
Awesome, though.
Yes, and so it's like, I just don't care. Do I expect all of the popes to be great theologians like fucking Ratzinger? No, that's rare. Yeah. Not even Pope John Paul was a great theologian. Yeah. If you read some of his stuff, it's kind of shitty. It just is.
What's the one he wrote about love, Caritas Est? No, that's Benedict.
Yeah.
What's the one that JP2 wrote for about marriage?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Theology of the body or something? Or
no, it was about marriage and about how it essentially backseated procreation to the to personal spiritual fulfillment. It didn't backseat it, but it didn't make clear that it was talking about accident.
It was kind of a dumb document. I honestly don't like. I do know what you're talking about. I don't remember
the name. Like the Luminous Mystery, we're not fans. We're Luminous Mystery skeptics. Yes, I don't want to say disrespecters, but skeptics.
Yeah.
on contragentilists.
I would never say that Pope John Paul II was a heretic, nor would I say his documents were heretical or wasn't heresy.
Yeah.
I just think they were kind of dumb. Philosophically, they just were. It's like, no, we have this long tradition, not only within the Catholic Church, but within humanity, to understand that marriage primarily was for the procreation and the rearing of the young.
We've known that for 2,000 years. Yes,
the Greeks knew this. Yes, that's what I mean. Most of the pagans knew, and most of the Hindus knew this. I mean, you could look all around the world, and this was a normal, logical inference that you get from this. And so, when you read stuff like that, it's like, well, that's kind of dumb. I just don't care. He's not a great theologian.
Yeah.
He's not a fucking Ratzinger. Most of his writings were just kind of, pithy.
Yeah.
It's the same way that Francis is.
JP2 was such a media guy.
He was. Yeah, he was a media guy.
He was a star.
Yes. He wanted to bring in the church into the new era, and the new era was all about like love, and marriage is about love, and so he thought maybe...
It is about love.
It is, yes.
But what does love mean?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, like, he was a pope of that generation, and he was trying to tailor the message to the people of that generation, because it is a living church. I don't necessarily think that the message was as good as it should have been. Yeah. I think most of his messages aren't as good as they should have been. Yeah. I am not the biggest fan of also a pope caring so much about politics the way John Paul II was.
They're taking the Soviet Union down.
Yes, like he was a very highly political figure. I don't care for that. And I was like, no, you should be a spiritual leader.
What about medieval papal politics?
Yeah, but that's normally politics within the church. Within their structure. Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
But like taking a stance and be like, I'm pro-capitalism. It's like, I mean, come on. I'm sorry. But
oh, you're pro a communist idea?
Yes.
I don't think I'm ever going to back off that for the rest of my life.
Yes. Yeah. but that's the way I view John Paul II. It was like, well, you made this division, you made this stance, and it's fine that you were politically inclined to believe that that was more virtuous, but For me, it's like, whatever.
It's not your job.
Yeah, it's not something that I think was really his duty. Yeah. I don't think he sinned in that sense. I will never call him a heretic. I wouldn't say it's a heresy, but I was like, you're kind of going beyond your duties. Mm-hmm. Just shut up and care about this, care about the actual church a little more than what's going on with Russia.
You know
Russia
what I would do if
United
I was
States.
Pope? Not that I'll obviously will ever be Pope. But
yeah.
If I were Pope,
yeah.
I would never make any public commentary.
Oh yeah, you'll be a silent pope. Yeah, yeah.
Silent pope, writing encyclicals all day.
Yeah,
just release encyclicals like crazy.
I wonder who was the most silent pope.
Just like encyclicals like crazy.
Yeah.
Have audiences.
Yeah, yeah, but never
an interview. No
yeah.
interview.
Yeah,
no. Why would I talk to those people? why would you talk to the New York Times?
I know. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Why would you talk to them?
I know.
Don't talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Have no. Maybe have like a little like pope YouTube channel or something and just. Talk.
Oh yes.
No yeah. interviews. No interviews. No
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah. Just be like Nintendo.
Commentary. Yeah. Just be commentary. Yeah. Just
like Nintendo Direct. Just be a Pope Direct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Papal Direct.
Papal Direct.
Yes. There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
Direct do a, do like a video a day. Just
yeah,
talk
to the people.
Yeah. Just talk. Write some articles, but never give an interview.
Yeah. No, see, that'd be awesome. Actually.
Don't. I don't meet heads of state.
Yeah.
Don't.
I know. That's what I mean. It's like you don't
just,
need to do any
just,
of that. If you wanted to, again, it's not heretical to do so.
I would
so,
meet Catholic heads of state.
Yes. Oh,
easily.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Poland, Croatia, Italy. Yes.
What about like one that's really strong, like
Filipinos?
Like the Philippines. Like even if they're not Catholic, what's that guy from Hungary? Is that
Viktor Orban?
Yeah, the Viktor Orban.
Is he?
He's Protestant. I think his wife is Catholic, but I think he's Protestant.
What if I just visit Orban's wife?
Oh yeah, just visit her. Like, no, not you. You do good work.
I just think there needs to be, obviously I know nothing, but like,
yeah.
I think there just needs to be an extremely exclusive in crowd pope.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't want to talk to people who aren't Catholic.
Yeah. No, I think that'd be pretty awesome.
Let's talk a bit within
yeah.
the family for it.
like
15
I
years.
I understand
yeah.
that the Pope is a public figure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he is. And so, of
but
course, he's going to kill
for
the
us
public.
First.
Yes.
He's our father.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But whenever I yeah. say, like, not into politics, what I mean is that not into the dynamics of the way the governments relate to each other.
That's what
I
mean. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I mean by politics. Not just politics in general of how people relate to each other. Of course.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, the Pope is going to, in the
that's
largest.
That's what Papal Direct is for.
Yes. The largest sense, yeah, the Pope is a political figure.
Papal Direct, it can be like, it can be the Papal. Tiara,
oh, tiara
with the like good. A play like a YouTube play
yeah
or something stupid
Papal Direct
mm-hmm. It's just the Pope he's just talking to the camera like 15 minutes like a couple times a week
yeah
beautiful messages
yeah
writing encyclicals all day
I think that'd be more effective for this generation actually
yeah
because I do think like the whole TV interview is kind of outdated
because
that's like 1970s
think,
80s
because my, at least, you know, my feeble understanding, again, I know nothing and I have no power in any way. I don't really know what's going on. But based on the reaction of people who are non-Catholics,
mm-hmm.
the Pope should be talking to Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see widespread evangelization occurring with the current group of people we have on Earth, at least in the West. I don't think you're going to go to the UK and a switch is going to flip and like there's just going to be a bunch of people that convert. I just don't think it's the dogs out here. Uh-oh. Oh, good, dude. Because I'm trying to temper this.
Yeah.
Obviously, the church needs to be outward.
It does, yes.
But I just think that there would be like it's like imagine you have like my grandmother. I'll give an anecdote. My grandmother was an extremely caring person. She was like a spiritual. She's Protestant, but she was she like prayed with people all the time.
Yeah.
People would go to her optician's office and just pray with her like on a rotating basis all day every day and hunt. Like thousands of people were very, very positively affected by her.
Yeah.
Her presence in their life and what she did for them and how generous she was. But like she, when it came to family, it was just like, she wasn't even there.
I see.
And when I see when I see, you know, the Vatican and their attitude towards non-Catholics who are suffering, and then towards the needs of Catholics, it's almost like they can't be bothered to deal with the internal issues of the church, and they just want to evangelize.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean.
And
yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like, you know how you get a president, like there's a president who's really, really, they're always either good at international relations or like international policy or domestic policy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're never, it's very rare you get a president that's good at both.
Yeah, Trump was good at both.
Yeah, I know.
he's rare.
He's rare. But it's, but you know that kind of trope dichotomy, like Wilson let the country go to shit, but but was extremely effective on the international stage. And it's almost like the Vatican right now is hyper fixated on appealing to non-Catholics to the point that Catholics just feel totally ignored.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I think that's
and of course I say that with respect. It's we're obviously living through an unprecedented time socially with the issues that we have.
I know. But I do think that's why, to go back to Bishop Barron, like when we started it, I think that's what's so important about his message, because his message was about Catholics.
He's talking to Catholics.
Yes, his message was about the people leaving the church. And people just don't talk about it that much. Or if they do, like I said, they just blame everything else besides them.
Yeah.
And I do think that is just wrong. It's like, why not just take a reflection, for fuck's sake. It's anybody that is listening that was raised Catholic, I'm sure this is probably also true about the Protestant world.
No.
And you're in that world, and you see the amount of people that leave in a young age, and it's like, it's not just because they're tempted by TikTok and YouTube and shit like that. It's because they're repulsed by whatever they grew up in.
Yeah.
It's how much the people in the church or in the community repulses them from the faith is what normally drives them away from it. It isn't just a temptation of, because if they were just tempted to sin or to do whatever, they would just do it in the closet.
Yeah.
But it isn't that. It's because they have this deep disdain towards what they think the church is.
But if that's all they experience, it's all they
know. Exactly. And so it's like, that's why I think a better message that needs to be given to Catholics right now is like, look, evangelization is important.
Of course.
But what's the point in evangelizing outward if people from the inward are leaving?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what ended up happening right now in our generation.
It's like teaching your kids Latin isn't going to keep them Catholic.
It is. Yes, yeah. Oh, I have so many friends at least acquaintances that have suffered that way in the recent times. I know people that just who were teaching their kids Latin, only the classics, homeschooling, never put them in anything. They limited their internet use. They monitored everything they have done.
It's like, what am I, Mormon?
And every single one, like 100% of those kids have left the church.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, again, what did you expect? Yeah. And but none of them reflect. They don't say, it's me, I did something. They always say, damn it, the devil got to them, or the world
they
got
say
to them.
That?
Yes.
That's very
that's
puritanical.
What I mean. Yes, but none of...
got to them?
Yes. I know nobody that has...
It's like some Quaker shit.
That has, I know nobody...
Okay, Calvin.
That was a trad, homeschooled their kids, that did everything and I think this is what bothers me about, Matt Walsh. Like, Matt Walsh always gives this message.
Yeah.
And he has young kids only. And so this is the part that I'm going to go, well, let's just wait and see, right?
Oh, no.
Because he always gives this message to people. He says, it's the parents' fault, you know? My kids, they don't use the internet. I don't let them use a phone. I monitor everything they do. I let them play outside. It's like, okay, you know how often anybody that has been raised Catholic, how often we have heard parents say that? And we have seen it with our own fucking eyes.
Yeah.
And I've seen all of their teenage son either just, you know, start fucking other dudes or just going out and going to college. And then when you talk to them, they're like, oh yeah, I stopped believing that shit since I was like 15 years old.
Would it be worse to just fuck guys or be an atheist?
Or be an atheist.
Okay, good.
Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah, because one of them is just giving in to temptation while the other one you're denying truth.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so it's like I see this shit happen constantly. And so like his messaging, sometimes I just feel like, well, it's gonna drive people away in the end, because these parents do fall into deep despair. I remember when we were at the when you were doing your classes, and there was that one chick that converted from Protestantism because her son was gay.
What classes? Oh, yes.
Deb, yes.
Dude, she was so classy.
I know.
She was spectacular.
But it was the same thing. It was like she found comfort in the church because there was a sense of salvation there that she couldn't find in Protestantism.
She grew up Lutheran?
I can't remember.
Her whole family's from Germany.
Oh, yeah.
So that must have been Lutheran.
Yeah, Lutheran, yeah. But it was the same. It was that same thing. It was that you could do everything fucking right. You could think that you're doing all these steps and you're teaching your kids right. You're putting them in a church. You're going to mass every Sunday. You're taking them to confession. You're giving them the sacraments. You are, you know, teaching them Latin. You're teaching them the classics. They know everything. They read Homer. They read the Iliad. You have done everything 100%.
Why is reading the Iliad going to keep someone Catholic? Yeah, I don't know.
It's one of the things. If you go to a Catholic school, you're going to read the Iliad.
No, I know. I'm just thinking like, but why would that keep someone Catholic?
I think because then it goes through the Homeric tradition.
No, I know.
But anyways, that's
the funny part to me.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But you guys could watch Family Guy all day and your chances would be better.
But at the end of the day, it's like they leave. Mm-hmm. And so you have to reflect and be like, why did they leave? They didn't leave because of the education. They probably didn't leave because of the homeschooling. They might have left. And this is where I truly believe, because I've been monitoring this since I was young.
Yeah.
Since I knew my friends who went to like Holy Rosary with me, and the majority of them just kind of left.
You did.
Yeah.
You fell away for a little while.
Yeah, for a little while. Yeah.
So you're almost kind of speaking from experience.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like, what is the thing that has stuck in people's minds? And one thing I think I have noticed as a trend was they always point to a scrupulous set of people in their lives, whether it was the parents or whether it was people in the church that kind of taught them, whether it was a priest or whatever. It's always the scrupulous ones that almost repulses them to the point that they never want to come back. Because
scrupulosity is like viscerally gross.
It is. Yes, it is.
In a way that not a lot of other stuff is.
No, yeah. And I don't think it's that. I mean, I don't think it's like the world. I don't think it's a sex temptation. I don't think it's any of that.
Well, sex temptation stays. Like.
Yes. I think what it is.
Like Catholicism is that gives you an out.
It does. Yeah, there's confession. There you go. Yeah.
We're saying don't fuck, but also like, you can come tell us about it.
Yeah. You know, like, if you're sorry, you get absolution.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. But yeah,
because you know the whole like the scrupulous parents like losing one of their children to the world, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, they're distraught. They're like, oh, I did everything right. It's like, what do you believe?
I know exactly.
Yeah. All I want is I just want to stare blankly.
Yes,
you did everything right. What does that mean? Yeah. Really? Are you capable of that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and it's
like, wow, when are you resurrecting? Like, yeah. I'm going to nail you to the house real quick. We'll test it out.
Yeah.
Like, what? I just don't understand what they're like. What do they believe?
I know. Yeah.
Because it's not in grace.
Yes. Yeah. No.
For them, because exactly, they did it. Yeah.
No. In the end of the day, I think the best that you could do as a parent, I think we said this in a few episodes in the past, but I think the best thing you could do as a parent is make sure that the kids recognize that the church is there for them. The church is like the spiritual hospital for them. It's like, you are in sin, you are suffering, you are doing whatever. Yeah. That's why we take you to mass. It isn't, and again, what I've noticed with a lot of scrupulous parents is that they use the church and its teachings as a means for discipline. It's like they're constantly reminding you that, you know, of the Ten Commandments, that this is what you ought not to be doing. This is going to lead you to hell. This makes baby Jesus cry. You know, but you know,
that's such a Jehovah's Witness. Yes, they're making Jehovah sad.
Yes, yes, Jehovah's sad. No, yeah. but it's like this constant drilling in the mind, and it's, for some reason, it's always geared towards sex. The scrupulous parent is obsessed with sex. I don't think I've ever met a scrupulous parent that is not obsessed with sex.
They're just like,
yes, it's constant. It was like everything is about sex. Oh, you can't watch that. It's too sexual. You can't do that. That's why are your shorts so short? Why is a skirt so short? Why are you showing too much cleavage? Why do you have to go on a tank top? Whatever. It's like everything is fucking sex to them. It's like, you wonder why these kids don't want to come back to mass? It's because they think that everything about them is sinful.
Yeah.
They look at their own body as sinful. They hate their body. They hate the way that they...
Well, it's just, you know, I really just don't think that Americans understand how dualistic they are.
Yes, yeah. They don't.
Which I guess could dovetail into, I've been reading The Unintended Reformation.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize you... it was obvious when I saw it, but you went to the same school as Brad S. Gregory.
Who?
Bradus Gregory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How long before you were there was he there?
I don't know, actually. Yeah.
Is that why you know who he is?
No.
Okay, because that was funny that he got his...
Yeah, yeah.
He got his, like, one of his degrees at Leuven.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Leuven. Yeah. But, I thought that was funny. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I can't remember when I read it when he went in there, but I think he went in there. He probably was there when I went the first time in 2005.
I think he started teaching at Notre Dame in 2003. So it would have been before you.
Right before that, then. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he was probably, if that's when he got the degree. He had the degree before he started teaching.
Yeah, yeah. So he probably was there late 90s, early 2000s then.
Okay. He was born in 1960-something.
Oh, okay, yeah.
63?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
65? Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah,
the school's been there for hundreds of years. So yes, there's no way to tell.
Since, I think, the 1400s? Yeah. 1300s, okay, yeah.
It was the 1300s,
yeah.
Which is actually mentioned in the
book. Oh, is it? Yeah, 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 yeah.
I didn't realize that the university system was kind of in contrast with the monastery system when they first started.
Right, yes.
It was two conceptions of what religious education should look like for adults.
Yes, yeah. No, that's interesting, actually.
Yeah. I just had no idea. There's this, because what? The Unintended Reformation is like it's an exploration of how the chickens are like,
it's probably fucking one of them.
That's like a beat. Anyway, it's like the Luther's 95 theses was the first domino in the chain to complete Westernized secularization.
Yes, yeah.
Or Western secularization. And it's, I knew that. Mm-hmm. You can kind of know that.
Yeah.
At least because...
And you and I talked about it, like, at least in a roundabout way for many years now.
Oh my God, this is... It's so distracting. It's the same note over and over. And it's like someone's playing a recorded... Like someone looped a chicken sound. It's so amazing. Is he doing it? Are you going to see? Oh, you're in the fridge. What's in there?
Nothing. I'm checking to see if there was anything.
Oh, like a snack?
Something to drink.
Oh. Yeah. Should I ask for sangria to be delivered?
No,
good. No, you'll vomit?
Yeah.
Okay. You'll vomit. Like the Protestants obviously rejected the centralization of... the authority of knowledge.
Yeah.
So even just that would secularize, would lead to, you know, the relativistic secular.
Leads it to liberalism.
Physical philosophy.
Yeah.
Naturalism and stuff like that. But I didn't it's an extremely dense. I was reading reviews of it. I was kind of worried that people were like, wow, this is a slog to get through.
Yeah.
It's not.
No, it's good. Yeah.
It's really well written.
Yes.
And I think it's a slog because every third word is jargon. Because it's written for academics.
Yeah.
It's an academic work.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here just like breezing through it. And I'm like, wow, I didn't have to get a degree for this.
Yeah. So
I didn't realize, and we're kind of shifting gears a little bit. Mm-hmm. We were talking about scrupulosity,
yeah,
and how people don't understand, like, the, you know, people like American Catholics don't understand how fundamentally dualistic the American system is.
Yeah.
Generally, its founding was dualistic, and in its understanding of morality and the nature, you know, they were deists.
Yes. Yeah.
And in the same way that like atheists now just are completely unaware of all of the premises that undergird their system of thinking, like all of the things they have to jump. Like when Hume was talking about how miracles were, there's just no evidence for miracles.
Yeah.
He's like trying to make some argument, and Bradus Gregory is like, all he's saying is that he doesn't believe it. Like, all Hume was saying was he just didn't believe it.
Yes, yeah.
He says there's no evidence. It's like, actually, there's tons of eyewitness reports. You just don't believe
it. You just don't believe in it, yeah, yeah.
Also, the section when he's talking about, like, what... If the sacramental reality of human life and religion and the concept of God as... ipsum esse subsistence, like without that, he gives this long list of like bases for what you think is the good.
Oh, right.
And then he said, or more simply, colon, whatever. Like, it's really quippy.
Yes, yeah.
But one of the things that was surprising is I didn't realize, like, I understand your SCOTUS disrespect better.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Because he keeps talking about, like, univocal metaphysics.
Yes,
yeah. And he must mean something specific about univocal.
Yeah.
Because univocal metaphysics without any kind of... If univocal just means what it means...
Yeah.
Univocal metaphysics isn't a problem.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But when he's talking about it, he keeps using the phrase as if it means something specific.
Yeah.
And he first introduces it when he's talking about SCOTUS.
Oh, okay, yes, yeah.
And I don't know if you can explain when he would say univocal metaphysics in that context, if you have any idea.
No, like I said, I didn't get to reread
it. No, it's long.
Yeah,
it's long
yeah.
as hell. But
I know that in terms of...
Because univocity is a word that SCOTUS used a lot.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Because I'm trying to remember exactly how he explained SCOTUS's first little, you know, the snowball's tiny and it's just starting to roll.
Yes.
Was SCOTUS in rejecting kind of the scholastic...
Mm-hmm.
He was a scholastic, quote unquote, but he was a huge departure from scholasticism. He was,
yes, yeah, yeah.
This stuff also isn't very well written.
Right?
It's not like well written either.
Oh,
I was reading some of it and I was like, but SCOTUS fans might tear me to shreds for I'm wording it, but I don't necessarily see a distinction if I'm wording it wrong. Like it's essentially true.
Yeah. Yeah.
If God is at all and people are, there must be some shared essential quality between God and people.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been being.
Yeah.
But the way he formulated this, like eradicated the category between an entirely remote God, namely being, you know, ipsum esse subsistence that we cannot in itself access with our intellect.
Yes, yeah,
it's totally impossible.
Yes,
orthodox seething.
Yes,
the way you say that, because God is in his essence completely unknowable. Because he's not even a different kind. Just not.
Yeah, Aquinas himself says you cannot know God in and of himself.
You can't.
Yeah.
You can only know things of God.
Yes, yeah.
In the world.
In the world, yes, yeah. So you know things of the world.
But SCOTUS was like, if God is and people are, there must be a shared
quality. Yes, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yep.
And that would be being.
Yes, yeah.
But in doing that, he begins to eradicate the category of God as remote from us and creatures, his creation.
Yes, yeah.
He brings them into the same...
Yes.
Category.
Yeah.
At least in that one.
But he also in that he separates God from being.
Because being must be
separate from God, that that which we know would he will constitute as being, while God then becomes, it becomes more of an ensuing.
Well, for yes, yeah, because if you have a, if you categorize God and people as both sharing in being in some way, being has to be
above God.
Above God.
Yes.
Which is weird because God is being. But
yes. Man, you're bringing me flashbacks of what I hated about SCOTUS.
Like that's because it was very well explained in the book. But I kind of went and did a little bit more.
Yeah, this is one
deep diving.
This is one of the biggest objections that I have with SCOTUS, because this again becomes the British and the Scottish misunderstanding of what God is, because when you when Aquinas, when every scholastic, you know, even the Neoplatonists, when they say that God, the definition of God is quiesced, and that's normally what is normally used. Ipsum esse subsistens was specifically a Thomistic term.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it too, yes. Yeah, yeah. But quiesced was kind of like
that which is.
Yeah, that which is, yeah.
It's essentially a Latinization of I am, almost.
It is, yeah, that's what it is, yeah. Yeah. And so when you have quiesced as the comprehension of the definite description, and then we put the label God to this quiesced, and so what ends up happening is that SCOTUS, I think, just has to compartmentalize God not as an act, but God as a thing. And so that's what he did. Yeah. Yes. And so the thing about SCOTUS is that he wants to present this category of being as the act, I guess, that connects man to God. And so, like, this act of being then becomes this separate entity.
Instead of God himself, which is properly understood.
Yes, instead of God properly understood. And so this is where then you fall down to the line of William of Ockham, because William of Ockham had the same comprehension. And then, again, you go back to, what's his name? The physicist with Isaac Newton.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, when you go down the line all the way to David Hume, Isaac Newton, all these people, it is literally the same.
Well, I'm gonna reformulate it because I don't remember the exact quote, but didn't Newton say something like, "I hope that normal people remain Christians so that I get raped less often," or something like it, or some quote like,
I don't know,
robbed and assault something. Like, well, I hope everybody stays Christian so no one rapes me. Yeah. You know, it's like that was like the essence of the quote.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but theologically, I think this is the...
That's like the root.
This is the root.
That was pre-Reformation.
It was, yeah. It was pre-Reformation.
That was the 1300s, yes, early
1300s. Yeah, yeah. And he objected to a lot of the scholastic and the Neoplatonist understanding of
scholastic
theology.
Meaning Aristotelian.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he kind of presented this new formulation that it's as if, I remember maybe it was 2 years ago now, we had this whole episode about language.
Yeah.
And it was one of the things that makes me wonder whether the way that the Anglos developed, they were unable to fully grasp this idea of being able to put into language essence of pure act, and they
who
always have
English
to put things,
English people,
yes, and they always have to have. So I did this entire research for a thesis that I wrote in grad school about language between the East and the West, and this was just it was actually for my
East meaning East Asia,
yes, yeah,
India, East Asia,
yeah, specifically Mandarin. And the Japs, because there is what is known as, and you probably know this since you understand copula. Language, as a verb bias as opposed to noun bias. Yes. And so, like, Mandarin is very verb biased, meaning that when they say something like, "I want more tea," I think they say, "drink more." Like, if you do a strict translation of the language, like, if you don't try to Englishize and just be like, what do these symbols directly mean?
Yeah.
It's always towards an act, drink more. And then they show these images and they ask them, can you tell me what is more related? And so they'll show like a fox, an ape, and a banana. And then the people in the Far East all connected the ape and the banana. And then when they asked them why, they were like, because monkeys eat bananas.
Yeah.
And when they did it to the Western people, most of them connected the fox and the ape. And they said,
they're both mammals.
They're both categorized as the same thing. And so there is a weird way that I think a lot of the mind of the Anglos think this way.
Well, we think in categories. We don't think in act.
We don't think in act. Well, I think the Greco-Roman people were a little bit different. They're almost like a perfect medium between like the verb bias and the noun bias, and they can articulate act and love and passion and life and all these things in a more active way rather than having to have categories of being constantly. And so I think what ended up happening with the English-speaking world, and really beginning with SCOTUS, is that he had to categorize God as something. Like the idea of just quiesced, it was almost as if he didn't get that. He'd be like, what does that mean? What does it mean to be quiesced?
Did he write in Latin or English?
I think he wrote in Latin. Yeah.
Well, I mean, English wasn't English.
Yeah, it was in English. Yeah, it was more of a barbaric language, whatever they're doing organically there. But still, I think it was like there was something about these people, because when you read all of them, they all make the same error.
Yeah.
Whether it's Hume, whether it's Scotus or Ockham or Bertrand Russell, it's like you could go down
Newton,
the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Newton, yeah. Yeah, to Richard Dawkins.
Voltaire's French.
French, yeah.
Locke.
Yeah, Locke would be the same thing. Yeah.
Voltaire did the same thing.
He did because
he was English.
Yeah. But when you go down the line, it's like they all depart with this, and sometimes when I speak to these atheists, sometimes I really do think that maybe they just don't get it. Like they honestly don't, because I could keep saying it to them until I'm fucking like hoarse with rage, and they still are just like, well, yeah, I define it as a giant flying spaghetti monster. It was like, okay. I mean, I'm done at that point.
You
because
like
it's
gouge
like,
their eyes out.
Yes, because it's like, that's not what I am saying. Well, I define pure active being as a giant flying spaghetti monster. How about that? It's like, no, I mean, it's not a category of being. It is that which allows me to make categories of being.
Yeah.
You know, that is what God is. It is the act. It's a pure state of being. It's a pure act. And so it's like, and so when you read SCOTUS, his theology goes all wonky because it's almost as if he wants to carry on the tradition of the Catholic teaching, but it's as if he doesn't really get it. And you read him, it's like, you're not dumb, but to me, it seems like you're not getting it.
I wonder why this is why he's so popular in the English world.
Yeah, it could be.
He's very popular with converts.
Yes, yeah.
And I think it's because they can get it easier. I just can't imagine, you know, when someone like offers a defense of SCOTUS or something.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it going very much, you know, like if you blame SCOTUS with the erosion of sacramental theology in the West, like mm-hmm. kind of starting the process.
Yes.
I can't imagine any honest and intelligent person offering a defense much more than like, oh, we didn't mean to.
Yes. You know, yeah. Yeah.
Like how you say, like, well, we have trans people because of Luther.
Yeah.
It's not like Luther wanted trans people. It's just his fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just he started it.
Yeah. Exactly. Like if you just picture like a marble falling down.
Yeah. 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 And that's the whole book just gives you a.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's like, yeah. I mean, just because it's on our ground, you'd be like, well, it's not the person who first pushed it to the ground. It's like, well, it kind of is.
Gregory hates Heidegger.
Yes.
It's so funny.
It's like your same hatred of Heidegger.
One second. What are your thoughts on Heidegger?
I think fundamentally it loses because he's trying to
write something and then quits.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, I mean, that's a big thing. But I think because he's trying to reinvent how we speak of ontology and of metaphysics.
When it didn't need to.
Focusing on the experience of being, the phenomenology of being, rather than trying to.
Well, he was trying to, because I'm sure that he understood that truth was kind of considered relative at the time.
Yep.
So I wonder if he was trying to reach reach the same conclusion.
He never got truth from a relative position.
Yes, like if you could.
Yeah, I think he was. That. Yeah, I think all phenomenology.
My book is over there on the thing. Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. I want to see if I can find the quote about Heidegger. I'll just see. I just want to see. It's just borderline polemical. Yeah. And how he can't contain his contempt for the people he's talking about a lot of the time. Yeah, he's talking about life questions in the capital letters. Life questions. I hate annotating books, so I never know where anything is. Anyway, Darwin. I didn't watch your Darwin one.
Oh, okay.
the reason I watch your show, because the stuff you say on your solo show is stuff I hear you say.
Yeah, yeah.
But I watch it to make sure that if I have to do any damage control or be like prepared for anything,
yeah,
I can be. I am not going to find it.
Well, okay.
Maybe if someone really hates Heidegger, they could
look it up.
Well, they'll be motivated to read a 500 page book.
It's like the only thing I like about ebooks is then I could just type in Heidegger.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I just don't read on my phone. I know. I just go right to Twitter again.
Yeah, do you really?
Yeah, I can't focus on my phone. That's not going to happen. Maybe a Kindle, but even then, that's just buy the book. If you're going to get a Kindle, just buy the book.
Yeah. I like reading on the iPad. I think that's my...
That's your favorite?
Yeah.
That's also harder for me to see. I think I'm a little weirdly dyslexic.
Oh, okay. Unless it's a book that I greatly respect.
Funkenstein.
I like reading on paper more, but if it's just something that I need to read, I'd rather read it electronically.
Oh, can I just read the paragraph and see if...
Yeah.
See if it's like half the page. Is that too long?
No, it's not too long.
So, he's talking about Nietzsche, and then he goes on to Heidegger, influenced by Nietzsche and sometimes regarded as a profound Heidegger, influenced by Nietzsche and sometimes regarded as a profound thinker who had deep insights about ontology, conflated traditional Christianity's understanding of God with Western metaphysics since Plato in his critique of ontotheology, as he called it, the conception of being in terms of a highest being. Despite his early work on Scotus, Heidegger sensed but seems not to have seen that the forgetfulness of being, which is Sinnvergessenheit, pertained not to a Christian understanding of God per se, but only to a univocal metaphysics, which especially since the advent of medieval nominalism has indeed tended toward a recurrence of the ancient pagan conception of God as the highest being within the universe. And he just goes into this long... who's sometimes influenced by Nietzsche and sometimes regarded as a profound thinker who had deep insights about ontology. It's so good. It's something I would write.
Yeah.
He's just so polemical about certain, he really doesn't like Heidegger.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You probably have a nothing opinion about Heidegger. You're like, useless. Move on.
Yeah, I think he used to piss me off more than he does now.
It's Heideggerians piss me off.
Yeah, you're not smart. I think just because I'm not as surrounded by it anymore. While I was in grad school.
Do you have an extra USB-C charger somewhere?
Yeah.
I look for it while you... No. Where'd it be? No, I just cut your sentence off. Oh, sweet. What I love about these new charging blocks.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything. Is that where? How long is this and what is it connected to? You were giving me the charger.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was just the cable because the new little things have two.
Oh, does it?
Two USB-Cs. Yeah, yeah. Well, now my phone won't die. Anyway, sorry. You said you're not surrounded by Heideggerian.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not surrounded by it anymore, so it just doesn't pop into my mind. But I remember when I was in grad school the first time, there was a many Heideggerians.
Just read Aristotle.
And I just...
Why do people not want to read Aristotle? What's the problem?
I think it's just because...
Is it stodgy?
I guess. I think it just viewed...
Why read Hegel?
I don't know.
Why read Hegel?
Yeah.
Why is that cool?
I think
why are there Nietzscheans? Why read Nietzsche?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say why it's uncool to be like an Aristotelian.
I think it's becoming cool again. But I think there's a revival.
I do too, yeah.
Because it's explanatory powers.
I also
infinite. Yes. Pretty much.
I think what ended up happening was that all the other options have been exhausted for almost 100 years in academia, that it's just...
Inevitable.
Inevitable, yeah. It's to the point that it's... Like, most of them... I remember, like, I think it was Timothy Williams. You probably could look it up, but he was one of the first epistemologists to do... It's called knowledge-first epistemology. And it's essentially Aristotelianism. So knowledge-first epistemology says that the entire...
Oh, with the glasses?
Yeah. That the entire get to your problem is just dumb.
Yeah.
And that's
not true.
Yes, yeah. I think that was only written like in 2001. It's kind of recent. And then now it's like, it's become the main theme. It's like, okay, yeah, knowledge-first.
Oh, he's... Timothy Williamson.
Yeah, Timothy Williamson.
He's from Sweden.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, knowledge first epistemology, and now it's become all the rave. But when you read it, it's like, oh, you just mean that you have knowledge as just a axiom. So okay. So Aristotle. That's a guess.
It's so weird.
Yeah. It's just that you have to just present it in a new name, in a new form.
Why?
Because
why do they have to do that?
I think it's because once you say Aristotle, they think Catholic.
Really?
Yes.
He's that tied to Catholic.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's just that that's all that they think. So if you're an academic and it's like, oh, we should return it. So that's the same thing that happened with, but it's kind of dumb because it's straight away, but was with functionalism. So functionalism was trying to bring back teleology and purpose. Yeah. But the moment you say the word purpose or teleology, they automatically just think Catholic. And so they're like, let's look at function. And it's like, oh, so you mean purpose? Teleology, yes. And so it's
but like, function already has a meaning.
I know. So I think that's why functionalism kind of didn't live as strong as like knowledge first epistemology, but
knowledge first. Wait, so knowledge first epistemology just means that epistemology is concerned with it, what epistemology is about.
Yes. That's right.
Knowledge first. That's like being first ontology.
Yes, it's like that. Yeah.
Morality first ethics.
Like when I first read that in grad school, I chuckled because I thought this author was like being cheeky. Like, because
it does sound sarcastic.
It does, yes. But I was, when I read his essay, I was like, oh, no, he's being serious.
Morality first ethics.
Yeah, morality first ethics, yeah. That's all that he's
basically
saying.
Language first philology.
Yes.
Like,
knowledge first epistemology is like, yes, that is what episteme means.
Let's just start saying being first ontology.
Being the first ontology.
Like, that's,
oh my gosh, I should write that. I would just get my dissertation completed and just call it being first ontology.
You should just copy and paste Aristotle.
Yes.
Yeah. Just replace all, we can, let's do it. We can replace all the words and it's something about like Nicomachean ethics or something. And just replace all of the words. Because you know none of them have ever read it.
I know, that's true. Even better, just replace all the words of Aquinas.
Oh, yeah.
Just rewrite the Summa Contra Gentiles, except, and call it being first ontology. The whole first book on God. I mean, it's a good, I think that's one of my favorite of the entire series is the first one on God. And that would probably get like rave reviews. It's like, oh, there's a new ontology. It's called Being First Ontology.
Just call yourself like an Episcopalian or something.
Yeah, no. Just say I'm nothing. You know, I believe in being. I believe in the energy
I'm
of the world.
I'm spiritual, not religious.
Yes. I believe that there is an act of to be. Hence, being first ontology.
So stupid. As long as you're first ontology.
As long as you never say
this
the word God.
This is such a nerdy thing to be laughing about. Who are these fucking idiots?
That's how you know you got into the deep end. Now you're too much of an academic.
I know. I didn't have to go to school to laugh at being first on theology. Like God first theology.
God first theology. Like Theos first theology.
That's funny. You should masquerade as a Protestant and come up with like a God first theology.
Oh yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah. You instead could of sacraments, one. It can be what would sacraments be called?
Oh, mysteries. Mysteries of being.
Mysterious participations.
Mysterious participations. There we go.
Call them the graces or something.
The gratias.
Write it in Latin. God first theology.
That's what you should do. You do that one, I'll do being first
ontology. Yes. So stupid.
You get your knowledge doctorate first in epistemology. You get your PhD in theology with your God first on theology.
So stupid.
You just got to keep a straight face the whole time.
Could it be like... I'm saying God, it would have to be like act first theology or something. It would have to be like...
No, that could be too, yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
I know.
First principle theology.
First principle theology.
I don't know. Metaphysical theology? That could be funny. Anyway, I don't know. Let's make it a tautology.
There was this this new fad that I think died down called metaphysics.
What does that mean?
It was like...
Your face just contorted.
It was so bad. I took that class and I was just like...
Metaphysics?
Just shoot me now, yeah. So it was like...
Was it just sophistry the whole time?
Pretty much. It was like a meta-analysis of metaphysics.
Like it's cultural?
Something like that, yeah. They wouldn't say cultural, but they would say that it was bound by certain contingencies.
Oh, so it's like a literary analysis of metaphysics. Pretty much. Of the history of metaphysics.
Yeah.
And like what it meant to society.
Yes, because...
read The Unintended Reformation. You're done.
Metaphysics, yeah. I was like, yeah, but that's not metaphysics then. That's just...
Meta. It's meta.
Yeah, it's meta.
Because it's about metaphysics. Where did you take that class?
In Leuven.
Wow, are they that cucked?
Yes.
Uh-oh. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Well, Brad S. Gregory went there, I guess.
I know. It's like you can't go to these institutions and not learn bullshit.
But it's the bullshit that should steal you.
I know. And that's really what, in the end, happened. It's like you read things like Foucault. I read that one in Leuven.
Madness and Civilization?
Yeah, you read...
That doesn't say anything.
Derrida and
which
Deleuze.
Doesn't say anything. I don't say anything. Well, Deleuze says stuff.
But yeah, like, I mean, like all these people is like this is what I read. I read David Hume. I took a whole class on David Hume.
You just didn't believe it.
It was just yeah.
It's like meh, nah.
It was so bad. It was
like, there's no evidence. It's yeah, like, well, you just don't believe it. There's a lot of evidence.
But the teacher for that class loved me, so I got a really really high mark on him. I think I got like a 19 out of 20, which is really hard to get.
Yeah.
So I got that on David Hume Klein, but she was like a young...
Oh, of course. Chick, okay. Yeah. That makes more sense though. Yeah. It's like imagining like a middle-aged guy thinking you were really smart. No.
No.
It was a hot chick. Yeah, of course. I should have just known that.
Yeah, I got a spectacular grade on that one. I took a philosophy of science class. I took a philosophy of mind. That's where I learned a lot with like Chalmers. And
Chalmers sucks. He's the funny looking guy.
Yeah.
With the bandana.
He used to have like long hair and tie-dye shirts, but I think now he cuts his hair short. Yeah. Then we read.
He's the computational theory of mind guy, right?
Yeah. No, he's the extended theory of mind.
Oh, yeah. That everything is like your.
Like the notebook is also your mind.
Yeah. The memory thing. What's that called? Where you yes, write? You it's your extended memory.
It's your extended memory. Yes. Yeah. Extended mind theory. And so
that's so retarded. Yes. You wrote it down.
Yeah, I know.
No, it's your memory. It's like, well, if it was my memory, I wouldn't have to look at it again.
Yes,
I would just remember it.
Then I took
what's
several.
What's the theory? Can you explain why that? We haven't talked. I made that same joke.
Oh, right,
like,
yeah.
Five weeks ago.
It's so dumb that it doesn't take that long to explain. It's just that he's saying that the your memory that your mind, because you have to remember that these people are like quasi-materialists, and so Chalmers kind of rejects materialism because he accepts the qualia argument.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if a lot of our listeners know what qualia, and so it was like qualia was the argument. Who was the guy? Was it Moore?
Qualia?
Ooh, I can't remember his name. Could it be in? Is it G.E. Moore?
Is the qualia guy?
Yeah.
He came up with the term?
Yeah. Look up, who came up with the term qualia?
He was one of the initiators of analytic philosophy, which is different than, is it continental analytic?
Yeah, yeah.
Qualia was first used in connection with the sense datum theory by C.I. Lewis.
C.I. Lewis, okay. Yeah, Lewis. Yeah, that was Lewis. Okay. So Lewis. So Lewis kind of objected to materialism. So he was saying that what the mind is not just material, because and he objected to computational theory of the mind, because the computational theory of the mind said that knowledge is simply your mind computing certain data and then spitting out the data, right?
Yeah.
He was like, well, no, that's not accurate, because there's a sense of knowledge that you have of something that is not computational. So yeah. So he presented the counterfactual of a lady in a room. So let's say there's a lady in the room, and it's a colorless room. So it's like there's no color, but this lady was always fed information of what color is, and so she knows all of the scientific understanding of color, the way that light hits the retina of the eyes, and so on and so forth. Like she just knows everything about color, just as a counterfactual. And it says, but this person never seen color. So he was saying that this person actually does not have knowledge of color, because there is a sense of what he calls qualia, which is basically an experience of something.
Which is justification.
Yes. Kind of, yeah.
Is that?
But it's more experiential. It's
no, like, I know. Yeah, yeah. But that would be the justification of
knowledge. Yes, yeah.
He probably wouldn't have said it like that.
Yeah. So he made this term qualia that said, well, because there is a quality of color that is not computational, your mind is not merely a computational machine. It is something that is something more than that. But they never exactly say what that means. It was
so
just
they're reinventing.
They're trying to search what the fuck the mind is. And so then there's like this emergence theory of the mind. So when you talk to a lot of atheists and academics, they have this emergence theory where they're saying, well, at some point the mind emerges from material into something that is not material.
How?
They don't know.
What mechanical process causes that?
You could ask till you're blue in the face. They're never going to know. There's like,
so it's just post hoc.
Like, it is, yes. It's just like, but we know that the mind emerges and there's qualia.
Ad
there's
hoc?
This, there's yeah, ad hoc. It's like, it just happens.
Yeah.
And so even if you read like Sam Harris, when he talks about the mind, he talks about this, the emergence. And so I remember the debate with Trent, even Destiny talked about it. He said the mind emerges in this point. And so with academics,
but what is that? I just would be like, what is that?
What does that mean? Yes. Okay. They're saying that that emerges from material. So they don't want to deny materialism altogether, but they don't want to reduce the human consciousness to just matter. That there is something immaterial that emerges from material. And so, there are different philosophers, theories of the mind that want to pinpoint what exactly that is. Is it just syntaxes in synapses in the brain that happens? You know, is it just electricity? Is that really what consciousness is? They don't know, but they're always like proposing different theories.
Yeah.
And so what ended up happening with this like quasi-material understanding of the mind is that, well, if you can't define what the mind is, but you know it emerges from matter, what is memory then? You know, is memory something that just exists in your brain, or is there an emergence of the mind that exists outside of the brain that is the memory? And if that is the case, why couldn't it emerge from other material substances? And so if you were to write on a paper and say, go to the doctor tomorrow, how is that not your mind extended onto the paper?
So it's a negative
Yeah.
Floss. It's not positing that it is your memory. It's saying, why can't it be?
It's kind of saying positively then it is. Because it is that it is that if your mind is an emergence of material things, that the mind can extend beyond its material already, because it already exists.
But why? What reason do they have to believe that's the case?
Because how is it not your memory then? Because when
how is it your memory?
Because you look at it and it says go to work tomorrow.
But you wrote it down.
Yes.
No, I'm not arguing. I'm just I don't there's no positive. They're not positing. They're just saying why not?
Yes, because then the way that many of the contemporary philosophers,
like Steven Crowder sitting down at a table going, you know, prove me wrong or something.
Yes, yeah,
change
yeah.
my mind. It's like no.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to posit something.
Yes, I do get what you mean, and just to clarify, what they do is that many epistemologists nowadays, I would say the majority of them, if you go to grad school, is that they all follow the scientific method.
Yeah.
And so what they're doing is that they're positing a hypothesis.
And then you have to prove it wrong.
And then you have to prove it wrong, yes.
So they write a thing on a paper and they're like, shit myself. And yes. then they're like, I have to remember to shit myself later.
Yeah.
And they're like, prove that's not my mind.
Yes.
That's retarded. Yes. That's what I mean, is it's they're not claiming.
Yeah, they are claiming like, it.
They are, yes. But
they're
it's
hypothesizing
it. They're not, yeah, they're not deducing that from
they're
anything.
They're not, no,
they're just like,
not,
well, yeah. that dumb thing's true.
None of them do anymore. They it's all so posit a hypothesis, and then they use counterfactuals to try to test it's the hypothesis.
So that's what Trent did during the debate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's dumb, and
this is the stupid thing about debating people, quote unquote, within their framework.
Yes,
their framework is wrong. Why are you debating them then?
Yes, because in that essentially, I would say it just
sometimes you get lucky that you can disprove someone's framework easily with a counterfactual.
Yes.
Not often.
Not often. Yeah. yeah. Not often. Yeah. And I
not
think
to keep ragging, but
yeah, I know. But also, when you get to that point,
yeah,
it's like I remember.
Prove it's not the flying spaghetti monster. I'm like, fuck off. What if I shoot you in the head?
Yes.
I guess you're right.
I remember
the flying spaghetti monster didn't save you.
Yeah. I think that the ridiculous thing about yeah. that style of thinking is that ultimately you're not really rationally presenting a hypothesis.
That's yeah.
What you're doing is that you are presenting something that is almost like sensational, and it gets people like juices flowing because it sounds like interesting or it sounds philosophically sexy or whatever. And so they're just saying, I'm going to posit this kind of interesting take that nobody else posited because it's unique. And then I'm going to try to falsify it, but I'm going to lose in falsifying it. And then I'm going to leave it out there in the ether for other like academics to debate over it for the next 40 years. But that's essentially what epistemology
is.
Yeah, that's what epistemology has become.
Ooh, problem.
Yes, yeah, so I present this. And, and I presented this and look, all my falsifications failed. And so... if you can't prove me wrong, I guess it stays.
You're like, well,
there's extended theory. Yes. But exactly.
You can't be justified if it's not true. Yeah.
And then that's what you
And
have.
Then your belief is wrong.
it just becomes dumb. And I remember just saying that in class. And the teacher really was both simultaneously upset, but also just kind of nerved. Because I don't think he ever had a student talk to him that way. Because it was like the middle of the semester, I couldn't take it anymore. Because in that epistemology class, it was constant.
These problems that were like,
yes. I present falsification failed, therefore it must be true. It's like, that's that's not how any of this works, you know? And
you
so,
know
yeah,
what, you I, know what would help them out?
What?
Being knowledge first.
Yeah, I know. Just be knowledge first epistemologist.
Yes. If they thought about knowledge
Yes, indeed, the first. Being first ontologists. Yeah, you know? Yeah. If they just posited that
you interrupt like a record scratch the whole the whole ontology class, and you're like, what if we thought about being?
Being qua being. Just hear me out, guys, right? This is a unique thought. So we just assume that there is being and that things come from being. And then they would just be like, whoa, that's interesting, man. As long as spiritual. I didn't use the word God, and then it's like, then it's something that they could talk about. No, yeah, and so, you know, like, I don't want to talk too much about that debate thing, but I think part of the reason why I did
you could have digested it more.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why I did get so passionately upset and annoyed about it is because one thing, anybody that takes that kind of methodology with any kind of seriousness, I think have not thoroughly thought through what academia has become, and I find that kind of irritating. It's like you should have at least, you know, I don't know. It's like you're if you're doing something, and that which what you're doing, it the process itself is dumb. I'm just not going to partake in it. I don't know how to, like, if I'm cutting up celery and somebody gives me a hammer, and it's like, yeah, but this is the way we're doing it, you know. This is the best way to cut celery with a hammer. It's like, I would rather use a knife, right? It's like, can I? I guess the back of the hammer has a little sharp.
Metaphysics versus physics, yeah.
Yes. It's like, okay, the back part does have like a sharp thing. I probably could like.
It's like, imagine trying to solve an equation in math and you're like, but what is its ethical?
Yes. Like, or just a methodology. Like, yeah. Try to solve 2 + 2 - 4.
By watching it.
By looking at the plus sign as a division sign. Just putting it out there. And then it's like, and then you just try to do the process. It's like, I'm not, why would I do the process if the process itself is
doing
already done?
Doing math with physics would be like, mm-hmm. So you have 2 + 2 = 4. So it's like, I have 2 bowling balls.
Yeah.
And then I have 2 other bowling balls. And I set them on the floor. And I watch what happens.
I'm just going to watch.
What is 2 + 2 = 4? And then you just watch and you're like,
yes.
Nothing happened. It's false. I present. For 2 + 2 = 4 is false. Does not equal 4.
Yes.
Because I tested it.
Yes, I tested it. And the hypothesis stands. Yeah, and so that's the irritation. It's like, I'm not. It doesn't matter who I'm talking to. I don't care if it's, you know. I guess now there'll be like colleagues of mine if it's another professor. It's like if their process, whatever the process is, if the process itself is inherently stupid, I'm going to ignore whatever process they're doing, and I'm going to argue correctly.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be done, because it's dumb all around. Like, the entire thing of asserting something and then bouncing counterfactuals like a fucking moron. It's like, just stop. Say something. Make an argument. Deduce. Make the claim. Move on. Can he debunk the claim? You know, then let's just do it. Let's just do this fucking thing properly.
Yeah.
Not just... play a retarded game. Not like,
it's like you put like safety goggles on. You got a bowling ball and you roll it down a slide at a park. And you're like, I'm trying to figure out what the good is.
Yes.
And it's like, what are you doing?
Or trying to play racquetball with a fucking rock.
I farted and smelled it, and what, God wasn't there.
Yes.
God debunked. It does, like, I farted 10,000 times and smelled each one.
Yeah.
God never said anything to me.
Yeah, just people just should ignore that academic process.
Which is like 95% of academia.
It is, yeah. And people have to realize in the long sphere of academia, that's a very short history, because people really started to do that in the 70s and 80s.
Well, since the late 19th century, it's really started to snowball.
It did, yeah.
Up until the 70s and 80s were like, it was terminal velocity.
Yeah.
I think it's starting to lose steam a little bit.
It is. Timothy Williamson is one of the first people to make it loose.
Epistemology.
And it's starting to lose steam because it's retarded. Because I took an entire fucking course called, what was it? Epistemic Norms of Assertion. Could you just think about what kind of
Was. Epistemic norms of assertion. Is it like a word that I would just know?
It's epistemic, so it's knowledge. So it's epistemology class, but it's about the norms of assertion. Basically, what kinds of assertion ought to be said?
Like
the normativity of assertions.
Yeah.
And so the entire class was just like, I remember this entire paper and
norm, is it like what's socially acceptable to say?
But they want to claim that there's something about knowledge, not that it's just contingent on societal norms, but it's contingent on epistemology. So it's the epistemic normativity of assertions.
Instead of just...
So they're saying that there's something inherently wrong. Like, for example, they want to argue there's something inherently wrong about racist statements. That a racist statement is not just a social matter, it's about the normativity of the epistemic phrasing that is being said. So if you were to say, make the statement like, black people are lazy, they're saying that...
There's something epistemically incorrect.
Yeah, something epistemically incorrect about it.
But what if I watch them, be lazy?
Yeah.
That's epistemic.
Or to make it more relevant, black people riot when they don't get a PS5. Right?
It's like but it's epistemically wrong. Something about my acquisition of that knowledge is wrong.
Yes. And so the entire pursuit of is that they're trying to posit, they present something, right?
I present
that the reason why it is wrong, because language is about truth claims, and racist claims are stereotypical and thusly not true. Something like that.
Yeah.
And so it's not a knowledge claim to ever make a racist statement. And so then after they present that, and then you have to falsify it with counterfactuals. And so then the person's thesis the entire time would be presenting...
Wait, so what if I said I have worked with 10,000 black people and none of them showed up to work on time? Not a single one. I ran an experiment.
Yes.
What if that happened? What would they say?
Then that would be a counterfactual that you have to bring up.
I know, but what if I brought? What's the counter? What would their counter argument be?
Like if somebody had that, what I would say?
What if every? And I'm not even saying this is true. You know.
Yeah.
Like every black person on earth is lazy. What if that? What if every single black person I'd ever met was lazy?
Yeah.
All of them.
They might want to know how large your sampling was.
A million. And then they would say...
Then they'll say you probably have good evidence for what you're claiming.
But it's racist.
Yeah, I mean...
So how...
Yeah, I mean, that's what you would have to do. Like, that's how your papers would have to be formulated.
Wait, but it had to do with racism.
Right, and so they would say
epistemic
that then...
Epistemic norms of assertion.
So then there was...
People drink water.
Was it... Black people can't drink milk or something, right?
Asian people are lactose intolerant.
Yeah, that's what it is. Asians and milk. Yeah. Yes.
90% of Asians.
That was just an example. Like, I'm not good with
the... No, I know. Yeah, but like, I'm just what thinking, would
they say?
Like,
well, you see, the funny thing is about in epistemology now, a lot of it has become research-based. And so, like, what you said that you would do, that if they did a sampling of a million people, that's what they end up doing now. And so they do a lot of online sampling. And so you get emails or you get whatever. And then they will say, like, you know, we're trying.
It's just a refusal to trust your experience at all.
Yes.
Even though the sampling is still your experience and not.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Doesn't sample all people.
Yeah. But they're trying to follow that scientific method. And that's what they're doing. So like the entire.
It's boring.
The entire discipline.
Yeah.
Yes. The entire discipline is about presenting a hypothesis. Using counterfactuals, or now they're doing research data in order to falsify, falsify your hypothesis that you present. And so when they present these things, that's all it is. It's like they're presenting, you know.
Go take a fucking statistics class.
Yes.
This isn't epistemology.
Yeah, I know.
It's not epistemology.
It isn't anymore. That's what I said. Guess what these classes have become now? They've become stupid. It's like, why am I looking at the epistemic norms of assertion? Like, in all honesty, I mean,
norms of insertion.
Yes. And guess what most of the philosophers, what gender would you think most of those
are? Oh, women.
Yep.
Go be mystics. Go write cool stuff.
I know.
Only write about your experience, please. Thank you. Yes. Goodbye.
And they always begin with a counterfactual of their intuition. You work in a place and then your boss says, hey, you look good today. Is that a proper assertion to be made? I'm like,
I don't know. Do you fucking look good? Did you look good?
It's so dumb. It's just so dumb.
I just want to pay for a semester of philosophy classes. So
you
could
do that
just to do one semester. You know, just to do one
just one.
Go in, nuke the place, never go back.
You would have to just never go back. They would like be like, oh my gosh, don't accept them into your class.
Ethics. I would love to take an ethics class right now.
Oh, I know. That would be interesting.
I would immediately be like, so you have a 4-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And you rape her. And you kill her. And then you eat her thighs like steak.
Yes. And and then just to creep them out more.
The 4-year-old girl.
And it tastes like a young hen.
Like a Cornish game hen.
Yes.
Veal. Try the veal.
And you'd be like, and if you guys don't know, I mean, the meat falls off of the bones. It just peels off.
You braise it for a while.
Really specific.
Some red wine, I imagine, would be nice.
Yes, I imagine. But it is. It's really good with red wine.
It's my preference. Yes. You might not like that.
And then when
I actually make a black guy do this all for me. While I watch.
And then when you have like an angry chick in the class yelling at you, just like take a napkin and like dab your mouth.
Sorry, saliva. I'm preferring the hell out of this interaction.
That's just talking to you. Go.
I just pretend to be a cannibal the whole time. That's the whole bit. It's not even a philosophy thing. I just bring up eating people as an ethical counterfactual all the time. It's the whole thing.
Wait, hold up. What if the victim is a Jew? Hear me out, you guys. Hear me out.
Very salty.
Yeah, it's going to really detail about the salty meats that they eat.
A Jew strami. Yeah, you cure it. You smoke it, thin slice it, steam it. It's the real goy slop. Perfect. It's not wrong.
Does he? It's trying to work a lot of closer. You're sweating.
I'm like, you guys are fine with this guy fucking dudes, but I can't eat a Jew. What's the deal with that?
It's like, they're not even human.
Nat Hurst is like, oh!
Just comes in his pants.
Oh my god.
So I want to be fucked.
It's your old bit now.
Yeah.
I would do that. Hilarious. I would do that.
I know.
That'd be hilarious. Just one semester.
I can't imagine now that there seems to be like so many much more well-categorized young people now. I wonder how they torture professors at universities nowadays. It would have to be torturous for them because I don't think they've really encountered a generation of
well-categorized.
Yeah, well-categorized young academics.
I think that especially the kids younger than Zoomers now.
I know, yeah.
The church is really tightening things up.
Yeah.
As much as trads don't want to believe that they are.
I know, yeah. Yeah, I could imagine them just like freaking out, because back in my generation, it was really just me.
Yeah.
It's like the loner. Yeah, just railing against the stupidity. And a lot of it, you know, I wasn't that well catechized. I went to Holy Rosary, which I learned a lot, but when I fell away from the faith, I had to come back to it after years. But it was just like me investigating shit, you know what yeah. I mean? And so it's like, I can't imagine like kids that had it even better early on, and then just getting already by 18, 19, knowing a lot of stuff. Yeah. It must be torture for them, because so many of these professors are still from the counterculture era. They're still the ones who have never read Aquinas, who have never read any of the scholastics, really.
Yeah.
Which is kind of pathetic. I mean, as a professor, you should read it. You should at least be familiar with the philosophers, even if you don't really like it. I mean, at least I'm familiar with Heidegger. I'm familiar with Nietzsche. I'm familiar with fucking, what's his name, Bertrand Russell and all that shit.
Like, Bertie Russ.
I know their arguments. Well, I Bertie know what Russ. They wrote. Yeah. Yes, Bertie Russ. But yeah, these guys don't know anything. And I just think it's pathetic, and it's kind of sad. It's like, why are you even a professor?
Wow. I looked up the lyrics to Informer.
Did you?
It's Informer. Yeah, no, say daddy me snow me, I go blame. I lick he boom boom down.
Yeah. I thought someone probably
detective,
know. I
lick he boom boom down. Detective man, a say daddy me snow me stab. I lick he boom boom down. Like, what the fuck was that? Detective man, a say daddy me snow me snap me stab. I lick he boom boom down. Is he making fun of Jamaicans the whole time?
Oh. I don't think he's making fun of them. I think he thinks he is one.
He thinks he's Jamaican? What are you doing?
He's like the original...
Those are too hot.
Yeah.
He's like the original transracialist.
Informer. I can't even do it that fast.
I know.
You know, say daddy me snow me... No. You know, say daddy me snow me, I go blame. I lick he boom boom down.
I lick he boom boom down.
I wonder what percentage of people knew that.
Of what he's saying?
No, knew the song when I used it as an ending song.
Oh, I don't know.
I bet a small. You'd have to be pretty old.
Yeah.
No, I mean, not old, but like, you know, like you have to be 35 to 40.
Me and up, yeah.
That's funny. It's like 1991 or something.
Yeah, somewhere around there, yeah.
It's old.
I know.
I mean, old for what it is. Like, it's kind of ahead of its time, but.
Yeah. Are we stuck with me, though? Informer.
You know, say daddy, snow me, I go blame. I look you boom, boom, down. Detective man, I say, daddy, me, snow, me, stab. I'll get that. I'm going to get that.
You're going to get
I've
that
been learning chance and informer.
Oh, good.
Get a nice balance.
And then you go to daddy Yankee.
That's, yeah. That's good. Yeah. I just don't like reggaeton.
I know.
Just not, it's not fun. It's not it doesn't inspire me to anything. It doesn't. It just is like. It doesn't. It's not even like sexy music. It just sounds like.
It's very vulgar. Not in terms of like bad language. It's just vulgar beat, like what you're fucking like from behind.
So not in a loving way.
No. I think a lot of like the black music is just vulgar, and it's repetitive.
Is reggaeton
beats.
Black?
Pretty much.
Isn't Daddy Yankee Puerto Rican?
He's Puerto Rican, yeah, but it's like the black Latinos.
Like Dominicans.
Mm-hmm, like Dominicans and Puerto Ricans and many of them that...
It's like black Irish kind of thing.
Because, there was a lot of... Yeah, there's a lot of black people that...
There's a lot of black people in Panama. I didn't know.
Yeah.
It's almost like... It's like Latino music's response to like bling rap.
Yes, yeah.
Because like rap, like gangster rap and earlier was actually like pretty melodic.
Yeah, yeah.
But like bling rap was like stupid. Stupider. Like,
which bling rap actually? I don't know.
It was like the 2000s.
Oh, okay.
Like rap in the 2000s got annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, rap isn't my thing, but like rap like in the 90s, like at least it was listenable.
Yeah, yeah.
like bling rap is like 50 Cent and stuff. It's just like not.
Oof, yeah, 50 just not, Cent sucked.
But like reggaeton does that to me too. It's just so annoying. It's just very, very low information music.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like not, doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It doesn't really reach to any climax.
No, I know. It's just like the same energy the entire time.
It is.
We were talking on the way back to the house last time.
Yeah.
Like dynamics are so important.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah.
It's something that I always notice when I get drawn into a song is one that has
the dynamics.
Even if it's from a singer I don't particularly like or whatever, it's like, well, I could still listen to it. It could be in the car and I'm not going to rip my ears out.
No.
But when a song doesn't do that,
it's like water torture.
It is, yeah. It's like 90% of Taylor Swift's music lack dynamics.
Let's talk about Taylor Swift. We were talking about Taylor Swift.
Yes.
So I don't know. I can't imagine any of our listeners listen to Taylor Swift. I would hope they don't.
Yeah, just, yeah.
And it's not that I dislike Taylor Swift as like a personality.
Right. Yeah.
Like
she's a crazy ex-girlfriend.
Her Tiny Desk concert was just her like talking about what Tiny Desk was. It's just like she just has she has nothing interesting to say.
Yeah, she's
in interviews. Like she's never interesting.
She's lacking interest in everything. I think her music's uninteresting.
But she's not lacking interest because so many people like her. So what is it?
I think it's relatability.
Like everybody, women just feel insane.
I think that I think lyrically, she captures the emotions of women very well.
Yeah.
And I think aesthetically, she's pretty, but not pretty enough to hate.
Yeah.
And then I think like her.
She's not like a sex symbol.
She's not at all. Yeah. And so I think a lot of it is just relatability. It's like women, if they care about lyrics more than they care about music. It's like, well, lyrically, a woman can listen to her music and relate to
it. They want something to like decal and cursive on their wall.
Exactly. Yeah. I think she presents that a lot better than many of the other artists of her generation.
Because there's something very solipsistic about Taylor Swift's music. Like she's the only person on the planet. And when women are dancing, they have the same kind of like.
Right. Yeah.
They're the.
I think like her. There's a few songs that I would say I kind of do like which ones are where I say are her best songs are I like you probably still find them boring, but I think it's a little bit better is it was kind of a slow song. I can't remember the name of it. My daughter was listening to it the other day, but that one does have a at least a climax. Mm-hmm. There is something to it. It was on one of her breakup songs. I really can't
They're
remember
all
the
breakup
name of it.
Songs,
yeah, I know they all are. But yeah, there's a few of them that when I listen to it, but like when one of my daughters listens to them, like the whole album, it's like
over and over and over and over and over.
All I hear is like this boring, I don't know the terminologies in music.
It's not dynamic. Yeah.
There's no climax.
There's no crescendo. Yeah. There's no.
Yes. Yeah, so they're just like, if I could just draw the way the music sounds to me, it's like a straight line.
It's literally a lack of dynamics.
Yes.
The up and down is the dynamic.
Yeah. And so it kind of gives me a headache.
But it's also not, it's not musically interesting either.
Yes. I think that's what ends up happening. It's uninteresting. I think she is a very blah, bland, crazy ex-girlfriend type of chick.
Yeah.
I think the only time she, and though when I was listening to that album that said that had the most of it, the only time that her music was remotely interesting was when she was dating Calvin Harris. And what people were saying is that she mimics the boyfriends that she's with.
Yeah.
And Calvin Harris, I think is a much better songwriter.
Well, he is,
And I think he helped her out.
I'm not a fan, but like
I'm not either. Yeah, but I think he probably inspired her or helped her with those songs because that's the only album in which there's actual dynamics in the music.
Yeah,
and but again, I don't remember the names of the songs because I don't really listen to
or care. Yeah,
or care to figure out. Yeah, it's I hear my daughters listen to that shit. But yeah, it's the same thing with a lot of like the boy band music. I feel like it's just kind of blah, and at least it's literally it's not.
Well,
like
it's mixed very flat.
It is, yeah. That's what it.
It's both not dynamic and structurally is from the beginning to end, but it's also not dynamic in frequency.
Yes.
There's not a separation between mids, bass, treble. There's not.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't feel textural.
Yeah, it doesn't at all. Yeah.
It's very flat.
And I really do think that's what's, and again, it isn't that I like her, but I do think that's what's different about Olivia Rodrigo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when, I don't know anything about Olivia Rodrigo.
Again, just because when you have teenage daughters, you end up knowing more than you want to.
I think every song I've ever heard from Olivia Rodrigo sounds like a poppy Paramore ripoff to me.
Yes, yeah,
she's very Paramore-ish.
Yeah, yeah. Just a bit emo. Yeah, but when you listen to her music, she does have quite a lot of dynamics.
She's also Latina.
Yes. Yeah. So, but again, like her lyrically, she's just a crazy ex-girlfriend like Taylor Swift. I mean, all her songs is about breakup, like literally.
Well, Adele kind of has crazy ex-girlfriend energy.
Yeah, yeah,
but her
she's much
good.
More interesting. Yeah. But yeah, and so I do think
she's also a good singer.
Yes, yeah.
Taylor Swift's not a good singer. Yeah, she's not even good at singing.
She's just blah. Like everything about her aesthetic is blah. Her hair is blah. Her face is blah. Her music
is blah. She looks like
an
NPC.
Yes.
Which is weird because I can't think of another artist with her success that is that boring.
I know. And I really do think the only reason why, and that's the only thing that I could come out of it, maybe our listeners or anybody else could figure out better, is that she's relatable. Both lyrically and in aesthetics and personal life.
But she's not threatening.
She's not threatening, yeah. And so most of her fans, I would assume, are
she's not even that well dressed. Like she's
that's
not,
what I'm saying, yeah.
Because I'm thinking of like my favorite, like Lorde is my favorite pop star of the last, of the 21st century, probably.
Right, yeah.
Definitely. I'm trying to think of a range, but like she's like interesting as a personality.
Yeah.
Like she's kind of odd.
She's extremely
well dressed.
Yeah, yeah.
And just she's like a ghost almost. Like the way like when she moves around and the way she talks. Just her presence is very ghostly almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And like but there's like she's interesting. You don't have to like it. You don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to click.
Yeah, she's not boring the way Swift is.
No, but she has got a thing.
Yeah.
Swift is just like nothing.
yeah.
She's like NPC. It's NPC music.
Yeah, it is.
Like other, I mean, just like thinking of all the other pop stars that have sold as many albums as her would be like
Madonna.
Celine Dion, Madonna, Beyonce, etc.
I know.
They have like stuff going on.
Yeah.
Rihanna.
Yes, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I know that like Adele. There's a list on Wikipedia you can look up of the best.
Right, yeah, we did that the other time, yeah.
But like, I just don't. Who that? Who of what age would someone be to know that knock? What? I wonder what is being brought. Jeremy walked away. Uh-oh. Where's my dog? Audience, hello. Come here. Oh, hello. Hi. What? Hey. What's up? Is this the reason? No. Oh. You want to shut the door for him? We can finish soon. Truman. Anyway, yeah, Taylor Swift is boring.
Yeah.
Are we done? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was she just checking if she could do laundry or something?
Just likes to come in.
Nice. Anyway. I just like talked to the audience for a second.
How far are we in?
We're over 2 hours.
Okay.
I mean, we don't have to go anymore. I don't mean.
No, that's fine.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about? I mean, is there?
Can't remember.
You had another thing you were thinking about?
Yeah, but I can't remember.
We were talking about Taylor Swift, and maybe if the tangential.
Yeah.
Was it a question? Mm-mm. Like a Protestant thing?
No, I don't remember anymore. Uh-oh. It was early on when I was thought of it, so.
Oh. Dion. We were talking about Bishop Barron.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just trying to jog your memory. Was it? Do you think it was brought on by something we were talking about?
No, I think it was just something when we right before we started. I was like, oh, there might be something interesting, but But I think we covered a lot of interesting things, and so
okay, we literally can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe write it down next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing the Q&A. July 18th or 19th, probably 19th. We've been doing Saturdays really consistently. Not July, August 18th or 19th. Why do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we'll be around next week. And bye.
Bye.